The Batteries Included podcast is brought to you with United Chargers and their Grizzly range. The next generation of Grizzly is here. Meet the Grizzly Ultimate, the most powerful AC level 2 charger for home use. With a maximum current of 80 amps, that's 19.2 kilowatts. Your vehicle could be charged up to twice as fast as a standard level 2 and up to 15 times faster than a level 1. And of course, it's Wi-Fi connected, so you can take control of your home charging, view stats, set a charging schedule, take part in demand response programs, and control your charger remotely. And that joins the lineup alongside the original Grizzly Classic. The Grizzly Duo, designed to charge two vehicles at the same time. The Grizzly Mini, a portable charging station. And the Grizzly Smart, a revolutionary smart EV charger. Those chargers can adjust the current from 16 amps up to 40 amps, that's 9.6 kilowatts. Plus, the Grizzly Ranger IP67 rated, built in Canada, and with the highest quality materials, you can order yours right now. Go to unitedchargers.com, that's unitedchargers.com. Hello, hello, and welcome to the Batteries Included podcast, August 30th, 2024. And if you're wondering why I'm the first person speaking, if you've missed the last few shows, we're going to mix things up for a while. This is episode number 52. We're almost a year in. Maybe we are a year in. So we're giving Dom some time off. He'll do the comments and the screen share and stuff, and I'll do the chit-chat at the beginning and the end. On today's show, we'll talk about this Hyundai Envision 74, greenlit for production. It's hydrogen and battery, out by 2030. What? We'll get into that. Rivian starting a referral program. It's a good one. You can get a free Rivian if you've got maybe 100 friends who buy one, sort of. And Polestar gets a new CEO, but is it too little, too late? I say that as a Polestar owner and love the brand. But, of course, much, much more going on. I'm your host, Martin Lee, from the EV News Daily podcast. Joining us today will be at the in-laws, and so struggling with, you know, the internet, just Mr. Tom Allogany, senior editor at Inside EVs and the host of the YouTube channel State of Charge. We also have Dominic Yoni, longtime EV journalist and host of the YouTube channel Drive Electric with Dominic. And, of course, Kyle Connor joins us from the majestic, practically palatial halls of Out of Spec Studios, where he produces high-voltage videos for his sprawling number of YouTube channels. And one of us today is coming to you via a Cybertruck. I've given it away because only one of us owns one of those. So Tom, welcome at the in-laws and tethering on hotspot. So it's working. Yes. Just before the show, we were like, oh no, Tom's a robot, but it's all working. So look, Kyle, you have to get into this today. Batteries Included podcast comes via Cybertruck power. What's that all about?
Well, I'm not the first one here to install a vehicle-to-home or backup solution for one of our vehicles. Tom has the Ford, what is it called? Pro Backup Power. Insert any Ford funny name here. You got to have Pro, all these good things in there. Mega Power.
Mega, Super Mega.
Super, super. Intelligent, Kyle. You got to remember intelligent backup power.
Yeah. Well, so Tom was the first one to install the bidirectional system. And the Ford system is totally different than the Tesla system, but I installed the Tesla bidirectional system in my house about a month ago, right after we moved in. And then I left. I haven't been home for like a month. So it's been great to come back here and pick up my truck from service and plug it in for the first time and then shut off grid power. And in less than 5 seconds, right around 4 seconds, my house, whoop, all the lights came back on. Everything was perfect. And I just haven't unplugged the truck all night. I let it run off the truck the entire day. And it's been wonderful so far. I'm running, this is a very Tesla podcast from my side because I still don't have home internet installed. So I'm using Starlink powered via my house, which is powered via the Cybertruck. And you can see the exact moment on this graph here, the one that I'm showing on my phone, of grid power straight to the truck getting plugged in. And there's a big spike, and it must have been like air conditioning and something else and something else. I'm not sure. But it spiked up to, I think, maybe 11 plus kilowatts there. And then that continued through the night, and that's our power consumption now. Still using from the truck. So I love the idea of using my electric vehicle for more than just driving. I love the idea of grid connection, home connection, buying when electricity is cheap, selling it back for not only monetary reasons, but also to help stabilize the grid. And this is the very, very early stages of what is to come over the next decade of EV integration.
It's just incredible. We're getting a glimpse into the future. 5 seconds is not a deal breaker. Obviously, it's not acceptable if you were using your vehicle as you say, trading electricity, buying and selling, and maybe even the power company or someone or a third party or Tesla taking control of your home energy bill, your vehicle. You're saying, like, I've got a thing with Octopus, and I say that I want my car charged to 80% by 5 a.m. tomorrow morning because I'm getting out of the house, and it works out when to charge it. You can, of course, override it if you just need fail safes. It works really well. And then they give me, normally I pay 23 pence per unit per kilowatt hour. And then when I'm charging the car, my whole house, not just the car, but the whole, because they could split it out, I guess, because they are intelligently controlling my charger. And so they know how many kilowatt hours they put into the car. And they know how big the Polestar battery is, because you've got to say what car you've got. I guess you could lie and say you've got a car, you know, an EQS with a big old battery. But but they don't. They give the whole house 7 pence. And so, you know, that's over a, you know, that's a third of the price that I pay, which is, we're just scratching the surface of that. Tom, how does it compare to the system that you've got?
So the Tesla system can offload a little bit more power. I can offload 9.6 kilowatts. Kyle has 11.5. So it's got a little bit more juice to it, and it will power up a lot quicker. The Ford Intelligent Backup Power System takes at least a minute before it powers up. So that there's a big difference there. I mean, you know, if this was a power outage, it wouldn't make that big of a difference. I've had a natural gas generator on my house for a long time, and you know, that takes about 10 seconds, I think. So Kyle's 4 or 5 seconds is really quick. You know, but in the case of a power outage, you really only have to deal with that one time, you know, and you know, then you're powered up and you're good to go. So yeah, it's much quicker as far as turning on, and it delivers a little bit more power. And you know, it's probably an overall better system than the Ford system. It should be a better system than the Ford system. Ford system was the first one to come out. When has anything been the first of its kind and been like really good? I talked about that in my video a lot. You know, I said, you know, at the end, if you remember, if you watched my video, I said, look, I'm so glad Ford's doing this. Kudos to them. Somebody had to go out there and pour a ton of money into doing this, which Ford did, knowing they were never going to recoup that money. But it's a learning process as much as it's anything. And you know, for what it cost and what you get back, it's the Ford system at least probably isn't worth it for the vast majority of the population.
Yeah, that's interesting. So I guess as well, again, you know, if you've got an off-grid system that you are either using semi-regularly or not, you probably would exclude things like perhaps the air conditioning or the HVAC system, because as you said, that's a big power draw that you might not need in them, or at least you could get through it in an emergency in many climates. But Kyle, so you've got your whole house powered from this. You probably do have AC, like you said. We don't have AC here in the UK because of our climate, but we haven't got any. I've got a freezer, which if it was current, you know, if it was working at the time, would be a bit of a draw. I've got a heat pump tumble dryer, so I've got nothing that's going to really, you know, if I was boiling the kettle at the time, it would pull 3 kilowatts. But so you've got the whole house running off that. And have you had any problems? Is there any kind of tripping out or anything? Are you pulling too much? What's the deal?
Well, this is just day one, and so far, no issues. I took a hot shower this morning. I had the air conditioning set to 65. I made it really cold in here. I was like, let's just test this thing out. And my truck, you know, I plugged it in at like 45% state of charge over 12 hours ago, and I'm only down to, and it's not like it's a small house, it's not huge, but I think I'm down to like mid 20% state of charge range. So still plenty more to go, and I can set a discharge limit all the way down to 5% before it shuts off, I think. So I can just use the whole battery, and that'll leave me enough to get to the office, which was the old power station for Fort Collins. And there's always power there because it's underground lines the whole way. And in fact, because we just moved into this house, I'm not really expecting to ever lose power. But the reason I installed this was it really didn't cost me anything. It came included with my truck. So they included all the hardware, which is a $2,500 value roughly with the the universal wall connector and the gateway. The gateway is the only thing needed. And then they, because I bought the tri-motor version, which was a significant upcharge over the dual motor, it came with a $4,000 installation credit. And you better believe, no matter what the install is, our install company made sure it cost at least $4,000 to install this. Yeah. So they got the full benefit of the credit. I'm not sure what the real cost would have been, but either way, it didn't cost me anything to install that portion. What I paid for was the addition of the second wall connector and then a load management situation, which I needed because I put in two full power wall connectors on a house that doesn't have that much service, extra service to it. So the whole thing, you know, all in after the Tesla credit was like $1,500 from my side, which still isn't cheap. I think there was a lot of inflation to the cost. I have a video coming on a lot of that and my impressions. Either way, I had to go with them because Tesla makes you go with this installer. And yeah, they were done 2 days of work, all done. And now we're doing this podcast off the Cybertruck. It's really cool.
That's very cool. And just tell us again, you showed us a brief look at that. Is that Tesla Analytics are giving you a, they've built that into the Cybertruck or into the wall hardware that you can have a look, like a lot of systems, you can have a look at how much is being pulled and things like that. I guess you can compare that to your state of charge on your Tesla app, or is it all integrated? How does that work? Yeah.
Completely integrated. So you can see here, this is the my home energy draw. So you can see the AC is the big thing that's kicking on and off and on and off. I don't know where the big load spike came from other than maybe it logged right as the air conditioning unit was cranking. And when it cranks, it gets up to almost 11 kilowatts I can see on the app. So it really, boom, shoots the truck up. What I'm curious about is, what happens if I have other static loads going? So what if my freezer is running at the time? What if we have the oven going and then the AC cranks? That might overload it. But a lot of people are saying they have no issues with a dual crank of AC units. The Cybertruck can do sort of a quick output, a little bit more than the rated capacity to help with these things. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, Kyle, hey. I have a question.
Go ahead.
If you don't mind, Martin. So with my system, I have a my house was different because if you watch the video, I already had a whole home generator, so I didn't need this. I did it for demonstration. But still, if you were installing it, you have to, you would install a sub panel, the Ford system, a sub panel, and just put your critical loads on that or whatever you wanted, but you couldn't really exceed much more than 10 kilowatts. I mean, you could overall, you just don't use everything at once, but you couldn't power your whole house. Are you powering your whole house? And if so, how is that energy management? Because you can easily draw over 11 kilowatts at your house. Is there some sort of load shedding device?
Yeah, so the whole house is completely powered from the truck. Air conditioner, other truck. I mean, all it would take is for me to plug in the charger. Yeah, so the entire thing is powered. Mm-hmm. And the Cybertruck is its own sort of breaker. So if I pull consistently over 11 kilowatts, it'll just boop, power down, restart, and power down. I'm going to certainly try it. I'm going to try and overload it over and over and see how that happens and how that works and if that is the correct process or not. They gave me the option. They said, do you want to just power a few items in your house? Yeah. And I'm like, well, I'm pretty good at energy management. I mean, I only blew up my old house once. I think I can handle this pretty well. So we're just doing our own energy management. But honestly, like we don't use the oven ever. We have a gas stove. I've never even used the microwave in my old house once. Like I just don't eat at home. So Alyssa does, but I don't. So, you know, as long as the air conditioning works and I got a hot shower, that's all I need.
Okay. So you're just running, you could overload the system the way it's set up. It's possible to overload it. Cause I know you could set it up with sort of load shedding devices where if you overload, you set like, an order of shedding. Like you say, okay, if we overload, the first thing I want you to kick off is the wall oven because we don't need that. Like at my house, we have like, I have a pool pump. So it's like, if we're overloading everything, shut the pool off. I don't need the pool pump running, you know? And then secondly, we have two electric ovens in our kitchen. It's like, okay, we don't need two of them running at once. Shed that one. So I know you could set it up like that, but right now you don't have it set up that way. You just have it set up where you can overwhelm the supply and it'll just stop delivering power.
Load shedding was not presented to me as an option as part of this installation. it's possible it could be set up that way. Yeah. They're actually coming back out to my house because there was a part that wasn't installed yet, which is a home energy meter. I wanted to see what every single individual device was pulling and have it logged and have it communicate with my second wall connector to dip down power when I start to reach the maximum draw from the grid. So under normal connected situations, when the grid is connected to the house, Tom, if I'm charging one vehicle on one wall connector, I got the oven going, we got the AC going, we got dryer going, whatever's ripping. If I plug in another car to my second wall connector, I have a home energy meter now that will say, here's how much leftover you can do, and it can dynamically derate the second car. I'm pretty sure that's the only thing that system can do, but yeah, definitely want to look into this load shedding thing.
Dom, what's your view on, I mean, look, for the last 10 years in Japan, they've been using the Leaf and CHAdeMO and getting them out of trouble after earthquakes and things like that. There's been trial after trial after trial. And now the latest thing is, oh, AI is going to come to our rescue. AI is going to do vehicle to grid and work out when you leave the house in the morning. And it'll automatically have the battery, the state of charge that you need, and the rest will all be traded. And like, well, we're not even at the stage yet, apart from some vehicles have vehicle to load. Maybe you can pull 1, 2, 3 kilowatts from them. Obviously, what you can pull from the Ford and the Tesla system is significantly more. But we've been doing this for, like, we've been talking about EVs for years. And we've been talking about vehicle to grid and vehicle to home for years. It's just so many moving parts. What's your view, Dom?
I think this, you know, this new Tesla product makes it with a gateway and everything, makes everything just a lot simpler, you know, before, because you need, like Tom's system with the Ford Intelligent Backup Power, you know, it's like it was a huge rigmarole to install that in his house with, well, he has a special case because he had the other backup thing as well, but, you know, it's a lot. This seems to really streamline the whole process as well. So, yeah, I'm not really sure. I haven't looked exactly what's going on with the Leaf, how they really use that. Do they need a whole house like off switch, switch off from the grid? I would imagine so.
Every system requires it because there's no way I can have this grid tied at the moment, but I'm pretty sure the Cybertruck can grid tie in the future. Like, yeah. I think the gateway has the capability to dynamically feed power back to the grid at some point.
Yep.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, this is looking pretty good the way this, you know, just plugged in and got it's shipping about AC power, right, Kyle?
That's the magic that we haven't talked about. Yes.
Right.
AC power, the cost of the inverter and switchgear was all in the truck, in the power control systems.
Ah, right. While we're on that topic, Kyle, can you fill us in? Because the whole topic of the Cybertruck supplying power, AC power, whilst supercharging blew up again this week. And I thought you dealt with all that back in January, February. Someone like Drew Baglino at the time replied to you on social media. And that all seemed to be another massive story this week. And someone from Tesla had to dive into the social conversation and go, no, the hardware doesn't allow it. We're working on it. So what was the case back at the beginning of the year when you got a lot of coverage for talking about this, and what's the system that they've been talking about?
You mean to run AC power while charging the truck, like the power outlets?
Supercharging. Yeah. DC fast charging.
Well, you can use them while DC fast charging.
I wonder what I saw some headlines this week about people were confused that the outlets weren't working.
Can't use them is when you're AC charging.
It must be that way around then. Okay.
Yeah. Because it's the same shared power management system does the charging and the power outlets. Oh. So when you're DC charging, you're bypassing your onboard charger.
Sure.
Right.
And you're just dumping current into the battery pack directly. And so then you can leave some power left over for the ports. But when you're AC charging, apparently the ports no longer work. I haven't run into it with my truck. I haven't done enough camping or a lot with this truck yet. We've still only just had it mostly for testing. But as we get to use it and enjoy it, especially over the winter, this may become a problem for us as someone who really loves to have the power capabilities of exporting power out of the truck.
And the weird thing is, I could swear that I read it the way Martin read it, was that Tesla's response, their explanation was saying that you can't offload AC power while you're DC fast charging. That's how I read it. And I admittedly glossed over it quickly. But you're telling me, you're saying the opposite, Kyle.
My understanding is when supercharging, the ports will work at a derated rate. for some reason. But when you're AC charging, they don't work at all. That's what I thought.
Wow. That's not how I read it.
Makes sense. Like,
but if that's a pain, because a lot of people will go to a campground with their trailer. And again, I'm going to double check this today, because this is just, you know, you guys could totally be right. But let's just assume that it is this AC charging situation for a second. If you go to a campground with a camper trailer, a lot of people will want to use the shore power to power the truck. So they're good to go and then take some ancillary loads and power their camper. That may not be possible. So someone said they clearly said you can't when supercharging. But I'm pretty sure you can while supercharging.
That's a test. Right,
I'll check it. I'll go to the
There's a video. There's a whole video in that, because I thought you dealt with this in January when you got that response from Tesla. Anyway, look, let's move on. I'm really excited about talking about this, because for long-time viewers of the podcast, for long-time viewers of Out of Spec that have been watching your journey, and you know the rest of us, Carl, have been watching your videos since you were blatting around in a little smart car, to see how you've built Out of Spec and all the amazing team that you work with, to now see you have this kind of facility, the Out of Spec hub, to be moving in somewhere. It's just so amazing and so cool to see you growing. And I know that you are far too humble to kind of blow your own trumpet, so I've done it for you. What we can see on screen, I think this is the state of it at the minute. Going over plans to make a great place to hang out for car enthusiasts, EV enthusiasts, make videos, have a little studio, charge up your car. Like, what's been going on in the background that our viewers can now find out about?
Yeah, well, this has been a work in progress for over 2 years, actually, to get a car storage, hangout, charging hub, sort of a, you know, base our testing operations out of. And finally, we found the perfect place, and you know, it's really not set up for our needs. We got to blow all these walls down so we can, you know, make this space wide open, rather than they're set up as individual garages at the moment. So we're just going to make it one big area. And you know, first of all, at a basic level, it's great to have all the cars in one spot. Great to get them out of the elements. A lot of them had been sitting outside. A lot of them had been at friends' houses, all set up, you know, stuffed around to different places. You'd drop a car off for service and you'd be like, please take your time. I don't want it back anytime soon. And now we actually can have a place to put some car stackers in. So you can see the ceilings are really high. We can do some triple stackers, and it's just a really cool, you know, to be, you know, in what we're calling the Out of Spec hub. And the location is the best part. It's literally off the highway exit ramp. So we are on the major I-25 highway that goes all the way from, I don't know, Arizona. It goes all the way south, basically, and all the way up through Montana. It's great to basically have a spot right off this major highway, which means we can also host a DC fast charging hub at some point into the future. The main holdup for that, by the way, is the transformer. Our power company said 2 year minimum wait.
Wow. And
I requested a megawatt transformer, which is like a lot of money and a lot of time. And it's going to be one hell of a project. But, you know, we still have the office at the powerhouse where we're going to use as our DC charging lab up until this place, you know, for the next couple of years, until hopefully eventually we just move fully in here. And this is kind of everything we need. It will be a workshop. It'll be a hangout space, especially on the other side. This is more of the storage area. As you can tell, the other side's going to be more of a hangout spot with a racing sim. And, you know, I just envision people coming up to charge, coming in, watching something, you know, have a, you know, a little drinks machine while we're there. It should be fun. We'll probably need something when we're not there, of course, but it'll be a testing hub. We're really looking forward to this.
That's very cool.
It's a nice space, man. But that's really though indicative though of like why it takes so long to get charging set up. Like you were talking about maybe putting chargers up in your parking lot, but yeah, 2 years for
It's 2 years if everything goes perfectly. Now, what we could do is we might be able to put in a battery powered buffered situation just to host one charger. But, you know, I love DC charging hubs. I love high power DC charging hubs. And I want a big boy freaking charging station here. I mean, I don't want to mess around. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how this goes. No promises, because it's going to be a learning experience for us. It's been the biggest pain in the ass to install chargers just at our office, which already has the power and already has the transformer. And so I'm just expecting this is going to be years of just, I don't know, hassle, headache. We've got some cool potential collaborations with some cool companies to come. If anyone knows of anything that would be cool in here, you know, if you have any trinkets or paraphernalia or stuff that should be displayed, we're going to put some posters on the wall and have a, you know, an EV and car themed, you know, sort of area and decorate it out. But there's no rush. We have this place for a long time. And so we're just going to move into it at our own pace.
Amazing. You are the new Jeremy Clarkson. I will explain that because for the reference, anyone who doesn't quite understand that, the traffic chaos caused by Jeremy Clarkson's new pub this week off the main road, off the A40. It's on the on the main highway, and he wasn't allowed to build a restaurant on his farm. So he bought a pub nearby. I think it's called it the Farmer's Dog, I think. And it opened this week, and there was 4-hour traffic queues and traffic chaos when it finally opened. And so hence why I say you are the new Jeremy Clarkson, because, you know, when that opens in Colorado, we're all going to be there. Everyone's going to be there for the big opening.
We'll host a big meetup. we'll do a cars and coffee or something like that, a Sunday, and get everyone together, and it'll be really fun.
Mega. Oh, well, that's fantastic. Congratulations once again to you. And I know how hard you work on this and some huge plans. Now, let's talk a little bit more about what's been going on this week. Tom, we'll get to something that you put online in a moment. And of course, that Hyundai hydrogen electric battery thing in a minute. First of all, though, Kyle, Jordan and Colton are realizing firsthand how rough the public charging landscape can be in and around the Los Angeles area. You alluded to this last week when we had you on from the road. Now, a majority of charging locations have queues. It's a mess. There's broken hardware. There's disgruntled owners. I saw this week the U.S. is spending over $500 million of federal money just to try and fix what's in the ground already and upgrade it. Of course, Carl, you're warning that the L.A. problem, which is, we think, you know, an L.A.-based problem, but this could easily be replicated across the country as more and more people are buying EVs, incentivized to buy EVs. Are we ready? Are we going to see this chaos elsewhere?
Well, if we don't take action quickly, then yes. And no one's taking action quickly. So yes, this will happen in other places. But Southern California is really the hot spot of electric vehicle adoption. You know, 10 years ago, this was really the only place you could comfortably drive an electric car. And now 10 years on, it's really the only place you can comfortably not drive an electric car. I mean, it's almost impossible to get an electric car around Southern California without home charging. Even hotel chargers, those get clogged up instantly. They charge an exorbitant amount of money to use them. The public chargers are just a lot of rideshare drivers, a lot of local users without home charging, either because they were given free charging programs or because it's very expensive to live in Southern California, especially in certain areas. A lot of people just have apartments or condos or shared, units, and it's impossible or difficult to install charging. There is a law that says, you know, if you there's a right to charge law that says you have to, your landlord has to let you put in charging stations, but sometimes the cost is just so prohibitive that it's not even possible to do that. And, you know, you can't expect someone who just leased a $150 a month Mercedes EQE with all the or EQB with all the incentives put in to spend $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, $50,000, $70,000 to install a level 2 charger at their apartment complex. You know, that's just not a realistic ask.
So what's the answer?
There is currently many different answers, but not one that can fix the whole thing. The workplace charging incentive certainly would be one. I think it's a real shame, and this is controversial on this show. I think it's a real shame that we are incentivizing electric vehicles so heavily, especially in California, especially in Colorado, and leaving people with a worse transportation experience. I get there's an environmental portion of this, but literally they are wasting an entire half a day at once a week to wait in line and to charge their car. That is an incredible amount of time that is just not worth it at all. So unless you have home charging, unless you have someone says not true. Look, dude, go there. I mean, you say you're there all the time. I was just there for the last 2 weeks. Biggest pain in the ass. And it's, you know, if you look at the comments in the video, everyone agrees. It's not just, you know, us trying to make a big deal about this. This is a real issue.
It's interesting, isn't it? Yeah, that AC-DC balance of how much DC fast charging do we want in? Do we want to put in? Well, we want to invest in that, don't we? Because we want to go on a road trip and get to where we want to get to. But I'm surprised that you're not saying that there's a load of AC. I've not been to Southern California in years. Like just a ton of AC charging everywhere you go.
You would think every parking lot, every shopping mall, every Target would have a row of AC chargers. It would solve so many problems, really so many problems. And when you drive around Norway, as an example, which is a beacon for electric vehicle adoption, every parking garage has rows of chargers. And they're just low power AC charging. That's all we need. This is really, really a problem. And the solutions are many, but nothing is the silver bullet. And it's frustrating. It took me 4 hours to charge the Lucid, 4 hours of waiting in line.
That's crazy. And, ooh, you know, when things charge at 11, 7 kilowatts is a bit slow, but if you can charge something at 11 kilowatts and you're on AC charging, you only need to be somewhere for, you know, you're surprised how long you can be somewhere, not just an activity that is like, you know, social activity. You go for a meal, maybe go bowling or go watch a movie or something. You can easily eat up sort of 2 hours doing that. And that is often, if you don't have a crazy commute, enough to get you through a few days. And we don't really talk about sipping electricity. And so many people are forced into replicating the whole gas experience. You know, if you can afford to put a whole tank of gas in, it might be, you know, £100, $100 or more, depending on what vehicle you've got, to do a whole tank of petrol. But that is kind of the mindset we're coming from. And there's so many people not in the mindset of, I need to sip, I need to get a little bit here, a little bit there. A lot of people can't do that then. Tom, what do you reckon the answer is?
Well, you know, it's time to give our sponsor a little plug here. If you remember Gleb, who's the owner, the CEO of United Chargers, he's been advocating for proliferation of lower cost level two charging, you know, and he's as long as I've known Gleb, going back 4 years or so, you know, he's just said, we'll never get mass production, mass EV adoption if public level two chargers cost $5,000-$6,000 each. Because nobody will install them. And when they do install them, when they break, they won't fix them. And he's 100% right, because it's a losing proposition. These property owners, you know, one of the things that, you know, Kyle's right with a lot of things that he said. And one of the things that he said was, you know, how they're broken and you know, that they need to fix them. The problem is, where's the incentive? Where is a property owner incentivized to fix them? They cost so much money to install and so much money to fix. When I had my level two charge point charger on my property in Montclair years ago, the connector broke. I don't know what happened. Somebody slammed it on the ground or something, and they had to replace the cable and the connector. It was like $1,800. You know how long it would take me to make $1,800 off selling electricity at 20 cents a kilowatt hour? I mean, there'd have to be cars plugged in 24/7 for like 6 months, you know, to even get close to that. And my math's probably way off. It probably would take even longer than that. But so what Gleb has been talking about was, he wanted to produce a charger that was low cost, that was a commercial high powered charger. And the new Grizzly Ultimate, I know I'm sounding like commercial here, but it's true. The new Grizzly Ultimate's an 80 amp charger that is set up to be a commercial charger I think it's a little bit more. The $699 is the residential. It costs a little more if you get the commercial version. I could be wrong here. I think it's like $100 or $200 more, but still under $1,000, and you've got an 80 amp commercial charger that people can walk up to, tap and pay, you know, on the spot. And I think that's how many, you know, put in three charge point chargers, Kyle, right? That all dual head chargers that are 7 kilowatt. How much does that cost? You know,
you're talking like a $50,000 install.
You know, do you know how many of these things you can install for that much money? Yes, you're still going to have to pay for the power upgrade or whatever the on-site, the utility fee is going to be difficult, but you could set up like load shedding devices also, so that, you know, if you hit a certain amount, all the chargers derate. But let's say we get to a point where most of the electric vehicles have 80 amp onboard chargers. We're starting to see more and more come out with that. The Ultium vehicles, you know, have that. Other vehicles have that. Let's say all the EVs could draw 80 amps, and we had rows and rows and banks of these kind of low cost chargers. That's going to take a huge stress off of DC fast charging and be super for people that don't live in charge their car at home, Kyle, which you talked about. You know, it's unworkable if you can't charge at home. Well, how about if you could charge at 80 amps across the street or down the block or, you know, at the supermarket where you're for an hour or the gym where you go for an hour every day, it might make it workable. So is it a magic bullet? No. And as you said before, you're 100% right. There's no one solution, but I think the proliferation of high power public level two is going to make a huge impact on you know, being on public infrastructure.
Yeah, and especially as batteries get better and thermal management gets better and these peak charge rates and charge curves get better, it's so tempting.
Am I way off target? Nobody's responding? Or do you all
agree? No. It's good. No. It's a bit just a delay on the delay on your connection. And you know, with so much focus on DC, this is a conversation that I'm really pleased we're having. So AC charging, enormously important. Hasn't got to be at home, and it hasn't got to be at work as well, because a lot of people can't, you know, we all think about an office block when you park at work, but so many people can't park at work, or they park in a parking lot and then bust into their factory or whatever. So, you know, there's so many things we can do with AC charging that are really, you know, funky in terms of load shedding and load balancing and things like that. Final word, Dom, before we move on, how do you think, you know, what will the future look like in, you know, 5-10 years time if we get this right?
Man, well, a lot more, you know, lower power charging if everywhere, like a lot more AC, but then also like a lot more like 50 kilowatt charging at grocery stores or movie, whatever people are parked for, you know, an hour or 2 hours, like every day. 50 kilowatts takes care of you, no problem at all. But also the high speed charging situations, we need more than four, you know, pedestals at each location. That's like really underbuilt, like the Electrify America and what's the charge? My mind's blanking on it. EVgo, right? Yeah. It's just not big enough charge. When you go to a Tesla station, and often there's like a dozen, 20 stalls, whatever. There's a bunch of stalls, and then with these other charge network companies, there's just like this, you know, four. It's just really undersized, and I don't know. Well, I mean, hopefully, Innova, the new charging company that's coming in supposedly sometime, so there's like seven automakers that got together to start this new charging network, and they're supposed to have an equal Tesla's supercharger network by 2030. That's like 5 years from now, but we're waiting for like something. Been almost a year since they started the original announcement, or just so, about.
The problem are not the transit routes right now. That was always the problem, but now you can drive long distance through anywhere. I mean, we do it all the time. It's really not a problem. Occasionally little issues here and there. It's the urban charging that's the problem. It is where people actually live. That is what is clogging up the stations, especially on the weekends when people are like, oh, I worked Monday through Friday. I'm going to block a whole Saturday or Sunday to go wait in line, charge my car. And you know, because in a city environment, people tend to be much more selfish. You're just, you know, you're not as open and welcoming and thinking about others. It's a lot of people trying to cut lines. It's a lot of people, I've got this plug, I'm charging to 100%. And that might be for selfish reasons, or it might just be like, I literally cannot get another stall all week. I need 100% to make it through this week. And there's a lot of panic and frustration at these stations. I'm not underselling this. It is a really bad situation. So, yep, not good. That's Let's move on. But we'll do more content on stuff like this because it seems to resonate with people.
We are looking at an old Renault Zoe. I think we'll end up with an old Renault Zoe. And just for running around town and things like that, because changing things around this year. And And I've never once thought, well, I'm never going to road trip that vehicle. So I'm going to look for one with a 22 kilowatt hour battery and probably maybe a 2017, 2018. There are some tax changes happening here in the UK next year in terms of how much tax you pay on electric. EVs are exempt from tax, at the minute. And that changes next year because, well, I mean, you need to fix roads that are falling apart, and EVs have been exempt. And so that's changing next year here in the UK. It's called the VED, Vehicle Excise Duty. We just call it tax. And but older EVs are totally exempt. And and one of those would be an old Renault Zoe. It's quite a difficult, complex situation to get my head around. But I thought, actually, we could run an old Zoe as a little kind of runaround. And they're so cheap now. AC charging only, 22 kilowatt AC charging, but AC only, small battery. It's about use case for your vehicle. But if it's your only vehicle and you need to DC fast charge, then that's a different kettle of fish. So that'll be an interesting experiment if we do that. Very quickly, Kyle, don't know if I spend long on this. Have you still got your Lucid Air for testing? What's going on with that?
Yeah, we do. Jordan's about to set off on the range test in about 2 hours. And so...
That's the range test today.
Today's the range test. Yeah. We're running it as we really should with every car. We're running it till it stops moving. So I'll have to take the Cybertruck to the supercharger, make sure the plugs work, and then head over to go rescue him off the side of the road. This whole day is about Cybertruck using it for more than just driving. It's all about power export. So I've got the NEMA 1450 in the back, and we'll charge up the Lucid on the side of the road. Should be fun.
Jordan, you got to shoot me a message on your kilowatt usage, because kilowatt hour. Because if you watched my Grand Touring range test I did a couple weeks ago, I pulled 111 kilowatts out of it and a kilowatt hour. At least that's what the car was showing. So I reached out to Lucid to ask them about that and said, they're supposed to have 118 now. So they dialed into the car and they told me, Tom, it looks like you had about 4.5 kilowatt hour left that you could have used. Now, I drove until about 3 miles past zero. So that gives you, Jordan, a little bit of an idea of how far you should be able to go after it says zero. I'm curious if you get the same type of response. And I went 463. So I'm thinking if you run it to dead, I think you're going to get like 480. That's my guess.
Interesting. Damn, that would be crazy.
Well, that's going to be a great video.
But we picked this day. So, it's for me, it's always exciting to be able to test cars that are clearly at the maximum capability of what that class of vehicle can do. And this is the range king, almost without question, except for the big battery Silverado. I have to say that's a range king too, maybe at lower speeds. But the weather today is going to be perfection. It's going to be about 80, 85 degrees, but you do want it warm. It's almost, it can never be too warm for a range test. So 85 degrees, almost no wind, completely sunny the whole day. And it's going to be awesome. And we're doing it right, perfect road conditions, everything. So this could touch high 400s. I don't want to say 500 miles, but it could do pretty well. And of course, because we have the ability... because we have the ability to run it to zero, we're going till the car stops. And one thing I have noticed with Lucids, and Tom, this could have been something that affected your test, is the BMSs do get out of whack. They're not always completely calibrated. And I've even had this car do some weird things. It stopped charging at 98%, indicating complete, stuff like that. So it does need a little bit more BMS tuning, but by us going from where it clicks off to full and shuts off moving, I don't care what the BMS displays. That's everything out of the battery.
Yeah. Well, good luck, Jordan. You got about 8 hours of seat time. I think I did 7 hours and 45 minutes. So have at it.
I mean, he's got a young man's bladder, but I wouldn't be consuming anything if it's happening in the next 2 hours. I'd be done anyway.
I told Jordan to start fasting and don't drink water starting yesterday afternoon. As long as he can live just until the car dies, I'll have some sustenance ready for him.
That's it. That's completely it. Right. Let's talk a little bit about our in-house Chevy Equinox enthusiast uploading his first video featuring his own Equinox EV, freshly leased and now in the Mologany household. He's covering off things like styling, rear hatch, cargo space, no frunk, performance charging, interior, infotainment, and the rest. Tom, how's the initial ownership experience, and what are you going to do with this vehicle?
So I'm first of all, I'm super glad that I got it. At first, I was like, I really don't need this car. But like, I have to tell you, and I've said this before, I was feeling a little pressure because, you know, I've been talking about the Equinox EV, looking forward to it so long. And so many people were like messaging me, you guys, Kyle was like, in one of his Out of Spec videos, oh yeah, Tom, he's the only Chevy Equinox enthusiast in the world, or something like that. I was really looking forward to it, but I don't need it. As you know, I have more than enough vehicles in the family, but I think this is such a potential important vehicle for General Motors, and the lease deals were so good that I said, you know what, let's go for it. And I'm so glad I did. I'm really enjoying it so far, to be honest with you. Meredith loves driving it. It's doing really everything that I had hoped it would. It's a little bit, and I knew this was going to be the case, but getting and driving it is a different situation. It's not a peppy EV. You know, I mean, it's probably one of the slowest EVs I've ever driven. I have the front wheel drive.
Slower than
Leaf. I think it is. I have the front wheel drive version. It only has 213 horsepower. Dom. So it's really not powerful, but that's fine. You have to use the right tool for the job. It's still more like, let's say, responsive than most ICE vehicles in that category. So I have to compare it against that because, you know, I think this is the type of vehicle that is going to move some people into an electric vehicle that wouldn't have been before. It's kind of, I want to say affordable. It's not that affordable unless you start stacking the incentives, which is what I did. I leased it for 2 years, and this is the 2RS with Super Cruise. So it's not like the base model at all. And I leased it all in, 2 year lease, $7,000. And you have to understand in New Jersey, you have to pay 4 years of registration up front. Even if you're leasing a car for 1 year, the state bangs you for 4 years registration. And also the state just implemented, if I would have leased this like 3 months ago, I wouldn't know how to pay it. A new like EV road tax, which is punitive. I'm paying more tax than a comparable gas car would pay in gasoline over the same period. So, but that's New Jersey. And so that was $1,200, which doesn't go to GM or the dealership. So I paid $5,800 for 2 years, for a 2 year lease. The rest is just goes to the state. You know, you have to include that. So they have some really good lease deals for the Equinox now. GM Chevy has to get these things out. They've been talking about them for years and they're putting their money where their mouth is. There's like 10 different incentives you can get if you qualify for this or that. So everyone is going to qualify for something different. But so far so good. Other than it, it's like the only EV that I don't, you know, you mash the accelerator and feel a little bit of blood getting drained from your head. You know, this is just kind of, you mash the accelerator and you get this maybe a little bit, you know, but that's okay. You know, we've been saying this, every EV doesn't have to be like, oh yeah, you know, but it doesn't beat a Tesla Model S Plaid. You know, like that's what we've been judging EVs by. Like if they don't run a 10 second quarter mile, they're slow, which is so nuts. You know, back when I grew up in the 80s, you know, the sports cars did 11.5 quarter miles, you know, like the top of the line sports cars. And now every EV comes out runs like a sub 12 quarter mile, but any event. So yeah, I'm enjoying it so far. I did like kind of an introduction to the Equinox video. I did a walk around. I sat inside. I talked about the finishes, a quick overview of the infotainment system, because I'm going to do a dedicated just total infotainment system deep dive, because that's going to take like 45 minutes. So I just did a quick where I showed some of the highlights of it. And yeah, I'm so far so good. I'm pretty happy with it.
Excellent. We're looking forward to more of those videos. I guess.
Oh, wait one second, Mark, before we jump off. So I also started doing a lot of DC fast charging. If you guys remember, I did with the Lightning. I did like 20 DC fast charge sessions, 10 to 80, 20 to 80, 30 to 80, 40 to 80. you know, 0 to 100. So I started doing all those now with Equinox. I'm not charging on AC at all. I'm just running the battery down so I could do a DC fast charge recording. But the problem with the Equinox is because the pack voltage is so low, I have to do all of these tests on a 150 and a 350. So I have like 16 DC fast charge recordings I have to do. I'm already about four into it, and it's not good. It's really not good. But again, use the right tool for the job. A lot of people that own these aren't going to be going road tripping. Some people will, of course. But a lot of people that own these, a 300-mile car means they're going to DC fast charge four or five times a year, you know, when they go someplace far. And in that situation, are you going to be sitting there maybe 20 minutes longer than what you should if you're going to charge a 10 to 80% charging? Yeah, you're going to be sitting there, you know, maybe 20% longer, but 20 minutes longer. But I think it's acceptable for a lot of people. For some people, it won't be. But I can tell you for sure, you know, it's slow. You know, I just did, I'll give you one. I did a 0 to 100 on an EVgo 350 kilowatt DC fast charger, and it was an hour and 38 minutes from flat to fully charged. Now, a lot of that time, as you can imagine, was above 95%. A lot of that time was. So that's not being fair, but it still was, it was exactly an hour to get to 90%, which is way too long. It's just way too long. You know, but the battery pack voltage on the Equinox is ridiculously low. I have to talk to GM about why they did that. Maybe Kyle has an answer, but it is, the pack voltage is so low, you just can't get a lot of power because, you know, the amperage draw would have to be so high. It's nuts. It tops off at 333 volts. That's at fully charged. It's 333 volts. You know, even that would be low as a starting as an empty point for most EVs. Like, you know, Kyle'd be like, oh my God, look at this. It's zero. It's down under 350. You know, that's their top pack voltage. Wow. So, you know, yeah, it's not going to be a good fast charging EV.
You know, Tom, I went on the Equinox first drive a couple months ago in Detroit and took it to a charger and saw this and was just shocked out of my mind. I was like, it was like somewhere in the mid 200 volt range. I forget exactly when it was dead. And, you know, I was just almost infuriated because this is not how charging should be done. There's so many losses. It's going to clog up the high amperage stations. It's going to smoke the supercharger handles. We're going to have so many issues with this. And this is supposed to be the entry level first EV for a lot of people. They don't want hassle. It should just work and be easy. So I met with the battery engineers about it, and they couldn't really give me a great answer other than just the way the modules are laid out. They're like, as a strategy, here's how we have our modules, you know, one by one. And when you wire them together in this many parallel, in this many series, you get really low voltage on these cars. And I was like, it would have completely been worth a completely different either module or cell wiring for model lines under, I don't know, 100 kilowatt hour. Just the smaller batteries require, even the Blazer, the big battery Blazers, obscenely low voltage. The only way to get big boy voltage is when you get the double stackers like the Hummers and the 24 module Silverados. But even those in split pack, or excuse me, in when they're wired in series, when you're at a high voltage charger, those are only like 650 volts, almost 700 volts nominal, somewhere in that region. They're not, they don't even get up to 800 unless you're full. So it's really a rough, GM totally messed up on this wiring of their modules. And this low voltage situation, as you correctly point out, was something I really hammered them on. And they were like, look, this is what it was. I'm like, someone did not think about this properly. And it was worth whatever money you had to spend to put a couple more in series and get the voltage up.
Yeah.
Well, the bigger pack, the higher voltage.
The bigger pack has the 102 kilowatt hour pack, Kyle, has two more modules. So that has a little bit higher voltage, you know, for the Blazer or whatever. But, you know, like I said, you know, we we tend to obsess over this stuff. There's going to be a lot of people where this isn't a problem for. I totally admit that. But there are also going to be a lot of people that literally will own this car and never see a DC fast charger. And, you know, is that somebody said I'm sugarcoating it. Larry said I'm sugarcoating it. Am I sugarcoating? Maybe, you know, it's, you know, I admit I have biases too. Sometimes I like the car so far. The charging should have been better. Make no mistake about it. The charging should have been better, but I would urge people not to use that against the car, possibly getting the car, but depending on your needs. Like, you know, think about how many times in the last year you drive more than 200 or 300 miles, and then you have to decide how often you're going to DC fast charge. Because if you're going to DC fast charge once a month or once every 2 months, this is a non-issue, you know. But if you're Kyle and, you know, you're going to DC fast charge three times today, it's a problem.
Yeah, I actually think for a vehicle at a price point like this, it's very possible that a larger percentage than normal will not have home charging and have to rely on public charging.
Yep. Yeah, completely. It's about the vehicle. Dom, any thoughts before we move on?
I was just going to say, you know, we've known for a long time that, you know, higher voltage is always better in cars and batteries and in chargers. It just keeps the losses down, keeps the heat down. It allows you to go like lower amps. The higher the voltage, the fewer amps you need to get the same amount of power. And it's just the way to go. So I'm not sure why they've done this like this, because it just doesn't give you, you know, as good a user experience. Other people, you know, mentioned like Hyundai can do it. Why, you know, Hyundai has 800 volt cars. Why is everyone going like 300 low, you know, low 300s? It just kind of doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Another car that has the same problem is the BMW iX1 and Mini Countryman electric. Also very, very low voltage.
Yeah, pretty low miles.
Dom, to follow up on charging losses. So I will tell you a little bit that charging session I just told you guys about, the 0 to 100 on a 350. I finished up, at least the charger says that it dispensed 101 kilowatt hour. So like it's an 85 kilowatt hour pack. So you say, well, 15 kilowatt hour, that doesn't sound crazy. It is a little crazy because I normally see about 10 to 12% loss on DC fast charging. And this, I think it equates to 18% or something like that. So it's a higher percent than normal. Now, I will qualify that statement with saying, I am not convinced that DC fast chargers display the right amount of energy. I am not convinced that we are not being overcharged from time to time. So that I don't want to completely put this on the Equinox. Would it completely surprise me if that 101 kilowatt hour was really 95 or 96? No, that wouldn't surprise me. That there's a 5% margin of error on the dispensing on the DC fast chargers. I'm not going to say EVgo is overcharging us or Electrify America is overcharging us, but I will say that it wouldn't surprise me if that is what's happening right now.
Yeah, some countries need to have calibrated independent energy meters.
Often we are one of them.
Analog. We are one of them. Really?
Okay. We are 1%. Yep, CTEP compliance is 1%.
Fantastic.
And I have personally found many issues with meters in DC chargers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, I've had people send me pictures of their, like, they finished a DC charging session. Like, let's say they own a Chevy Bolt, and they're like, Tom, I plugged in at 20% and I charged to 90% and I was billed for 75 kilowatt hour. Something went on. Oh, something's not right there, you know?
So yeah, it's just a screen.
I've literally had people send me pictures that proved that something was wrong. Now the question is it intentional or is it just some stations are broken? You know, I don't know any of that. I don't have any answer to that, but I know for a fact, sometimes people are being overcharged. That is a fact.
So I know for sure, I saw a weights and measures post sticker, like a non-conformant non-compliance with an Electrify America station this week in California. And actually a buddy of mine called up the weights and measures department and said, what is this for? And it was, they didn't have some label or something on there, but they said they actually had the equipment and checked the meters in those Electrify America chargers, and they were within the accuracy range. Now, I'm not sure how they're doing that. There are many different ways of doing it. It might be easier for it to be accurate under low amperage conditions than when it's pushing 500 amps. I don't know the answer to that actually, and what their load profile looks like to calculate a certified meter, but definitely something we're going to be looking into.
Yeah, absolutely. Dom, I've missed it when I've been, oh, there we go. That's on screen right now. And again, some countries will have this, some states even, as in some countries in Europe, have independent monitors of sort of little analog meters that spin around that are calibrated, and the station can't work unless they're calibrated. So before we move on and get into the news, got half an hour to do some news stories, Dom, because I've been looking at what's happening in the running order. Did we show up that starred? I see we've got a starred comment on screen from someone who's kindly supported the podcast. I know we haven't talked about it then, so let's pop that up. So Mark Norman says, check out the latest Volts podcast, and the founder of It's Electric, bring your own cable level 2 charging in US cities. They're crushing it. Okay. Thank you, Mark. Very kind. Thank you for supporting the podcast, as always. And before we get into the news, a recommendation of what you could watch this week. Jason Fenske of Engineering Explained, which is just one of the best YouTube channels out there anyway. Plus, Jason's just one of those people that you want to have a beer with. And just, it just looks like the nicest person ever. He put out a video focusing on the degradation of a lithium iron phosphate LFP batteries when they are frequently charged to full capacity. The video went into a recent study published in the Journal of Electrochemical Societies, which found that if you keep LFP batteries constantly a high state of charge, it can accelerate their degradation because of negative reactions in the battery pack. Now, LFP batteries are almost looked at from some people as sort of as magical. They're cheaper, more stable, longer lifespan than some traditional nickel-based batteries. But he was talking about how repeated full charges can lead to the formation of harmful compounds in the battery, which consume the lithium and contribute to faster degradation, which goes against almost the kind of common wisdom of just treat an LFP pack how you like. Now, it could be that you don't worry about that, or it could be that time beats the cycles, as it were. But either way, Tesla say that they want you to charge to 100%, but I'm not sure the cadence. Ford, I do know Ford are monthly, so they're like charged to 100% monthly. That seems to be about a sweet spot. Either way, a really good in-depth explanation of the findings. He's an incredible storyteller and unpicks things for idiots like me, very complicated subjects. And I learned a lot because, again, LFP packs are almost looked at these things that you can just use and abuse and don't worry about it, but not quite as simple as that. Right, let's get into some news then, because it's really interesting. This week, Hyundai had their investor day. Latest strategy is all about hybrids and plug-in hybrids and still EVs, but also we love hybrids, but also we love EV. We love hybrids and we're not sure about where full electrics will be. But hydrogen was back on the cards. One of the categories was high-performance EVs, the Envision 74. And this was originally released in 2022 on N Day, and the concept has a, I can put that on screen right now, a 62 kilowatt hour battery. This, the concept had two electric motors on the rear axle, both on the rear axle. They were going to build 100 of them, and 30 of those were going to be for racing. But they brought this back and said it's going to be a high performance hydrogen vehicle with a date of 2030 on it, which is, you know, it's a blink of an eye in car world. That means they're working on it, you know, commercializing it now, which I thought was interesting. We'll get into all the hybrid stuff in a minute, but let's cover this off quickly. And my first reaction was, that's nice for them. Where are you going to refill it? I mean, Kyle, you've done a couple of videos on hydrogen. They did really well as well. And you've been in California recently. Were you tripping over hydrogen stations in California?
I drove past the ones I knew, and they're, you know, it's just like early days of EVs. Infrastructure is the problem. When we talk about cars, though, it is very different in different markets, Martin. For example, in Japan, hydrogen's readily available, easy to find stations. Just, I know it's a small market, but at least, you know, it's not like it doesn't work everywhere. I'm not here to say hydrogen's good for passenger vehicles. I'm not a believer in that per se. I'm a believer in the sense that it can work, but I'm not sure that's where we should put our resources. I've gone on a Mirai road trip. I've spent a lot of time with that car. It works. I was able to get from A to B, and I was able to refill it multiple times, with some planning ahead, very not dissimilar from early days of electric car road tripping. But I do think I like the idea of hydrogen for larger scale stuff. Hydrogen's cool. I'm pretty fascinated by it. But do we really need them in our small passenger cars? Maybe not. Although I do like the idea of it for a high performance application. Take all the weight out of the battery, have some, you know, much more energy dense, lightweight fuel that can run full steam to buffer a battery or have a battery buffering that system. And it could be kind of fun, actually. They make some interesting noises. Like, there's some character to it. So look, I'm not here to just be like all my friends, including you guys and others, are just like, hydrogen's dumb. I don't want this for passenger cars. I'm pretty energy source agnostic, I would say. Mm. I like hydrogen for certain applications.
Yeah, on a racetrack as well, I can see how it would work on a racetrack. You spend a fair amount of time either off throttle when you are regenning, as well as braking in the braking zones when, again, regen, plus if you had a hydrogen generator working at flat chat, filling up the battery there for full throttle moments, and when you're back on throttle. So that would be really interesting. I'm definitely one of those that don't want to go back to the old way of living. Like, I love having solar panels. I love having a battery. That's all cool. A lot of people can't afford it. I'm not saying everyone should, but I like refilling my car at home, and I like having a choice of energy providers often that you can lock in for a period of time, sometimes 12 months. So you know what your bills are going to be. I'm not mad keen to then go back to a system where somebody else sets the prices. I can't generate it myself. It's a handful of corporations in control effectively. I kind of like that, but
I also think you won't ever have to. I think battery electric is mature enough that we know it's here to stay. And so if for your personal needs and your personal choices, you'll always be able to have solar charging your car and backfeeding to the grid. But for many people, either A, who just don't want to change in mindset, or, you know, are interested in having quick refuel times with no availability to charge at home, it might actually work for certain people in certain markets.
Yeah, I do worry about long haul trucking and, you know, megawatt charging. And yeah, I know that the MCS is out there. I know that we can charge extremely quickly in trucks, but ferries that do point to point need to charge extremely quickly. It can be done. And as we began the podcast talking about your hub, the energy infrastructure to charge one semi-truck, let alone 30 at a rest stop, is just unbelievably next level. So that, yeah, hydrogen has a place. But you mentioned about how we'll be driving in the future. Let's get into that, because Hyundai talked a lot about that. First of all, Hyundai Ioniq 9. So it's not called the 7 SEVEN, but we now it's the number 9 numerical. We knew that was coming. Three-row SUV built at Meta Plant outside Savannah, Georgia. Lots of mentions of the demand for EV being different to what the car makers, in this case Hyundai, were expecting. So they're increasing their hybrid models. Genesis offering hybrids, not going pure EV. They talked about EREVs, extended range electric vehicles in North America and China. And they talked about, hey, our new EVs can go 560 miles, 900 kilometers. Yeah, they're kind of gas cars, aren't they? On the battery front, not only NCM and LFP, they're looking at more low-cost NCM cell technology for entry-level vehicles as well. Their goal, 2 million EVs a year out of 5.5 million vehicles all together. Tom, we've talked about this a lot, particularly with Ford lately, in terms of their wavering, their talk about how the demand and supply is all a little bit mismatched at the minute. And now Hyundai coming out saying, okay, more hybrids, extended range EVs, very popular in China. Nissan's technology, I think, is called E-Power. But, you know, cars without a plug socket on the side of them, the only way to move them is to burn stuff. Yeah, they've got decent sized batteries and they'll do regen and stuff like that. But ultimately, you can't put electrons into them. So, Tom, what's your take on Hyundai's big story this week?
Well, you know, it's not surprising. I think that, as much as many of us are really electric vehicle enthusiasts, there's still a lot of people that aren't. There's still a lot of people that don't either don't believe that it's feasible or live in areas where the infrastructure is not yet at a robust point. So I think that a lot of these companies are saying, hey, we don't want to just give up the next 5 or 6 or 7 years of sales of our vehicles, you know, betting on the one technology, which we all agree is going to be the dominant technology for many years. But why should we just go all in now when we could take advantage of some of these other technologies over the course of the next 5, 6, 7 years and then really maybe go head in the early 2030s. You know, I think that's what a lot of these companies are looking at. And quite honestly, I think the reason why we're seeing this more and more is that the infrastructure, the state of infrastructure. And, you know, if we had a prolific electric vehicle infrastructure here in the U.S., if charging wasn't a problem, if what Kyle experienced last week didn't happen, then I don't think we would see let's maybe focus on hybrids for the next generation of vehicles and then go back head in. But the fact of the matter is there are many instances where living with a BEV is not going to be very convenient for a lot of people. So does it surprise me? Absolutely not. I just hope that, I mean, I'm less concerned about Hyundai than I am about Ford and GM. I think Hyundai has their eye on the ball. They know what the future is going to be and they're going at it. They're not slowing down their electric vehicle program to produce these hybrids, whereas it seems like Ford and GM is. You know, they're saying, you know, well, we're going to focus on hybrids for a little while, and then, you know, in the 2030s, we'll bring you some new EVs. We're going to push back our BEVs. We don't seem to be getting that talk from Hyundai, the Hyundai group. It almost seems like they're still going full steam with the BEVs, and the hybrids are actually going to be eating into their combustion sale portfolio. Whereas with Ford and GM, they're not pulling back on the combustion; they're pulling back on BEV and cutting into BEV with their hybrids. So I think that's two different philosophies. That's how I believe, at least, you know. And yeah. I tell you, the Hyundai group seems to have their eye on the ball. I had a friend send me some pictures of the EV9 in testing out somewhere doing long range testing, and it has a NACS port. So that vehicle is going to launch with NACS. IONIQ 9, not EV 9. I'm sorry. The Hyundai full size SUV, and he took pictures of it with the NACS port. And the guy started taking pictures inside the vehicle, and the guy from Hyundai was yelling at him and saying, "You can't take pictures." And there's and I'm going to post the pictures at some point. There's actually a letter taped to the window saying that this is a prototype vehicle. You are not allowed to photograph it. Hyundai Group will seek relief if you post pictures of it and everything. And it
Go drive it on your own private test track behind a. Like Ferrari have got a Maranello, but don't put it on the public roads. That's crazy.
Exactly. It spooked him, but I told him, I said, you don't have to worry about that. You're not going to get in trouble. This is in the public domain in a public parking lot. You could do it. You could take any pictures you want, but he snapped 4 pictures. They were actually charging at an Electrify America charging station with the NACS to CCS1 adapter because they were checking to see if the adapters worked the other way. So, I think Hyundai is going to be like one of the first companies to really start fully integrating NACS into their production vehicles.
That saves the adapter
just
problem.
On the topic of extended range EVs, if you're going to do anything with combustion and electric, that is the proper way of doing it. Give everyone the smooth electric driving experience with the instant power with big electric motors that drive the car all the time. And then use the combustion engine just as a generator to refill the battery. And to me, this is, that is the correct way of doing a plug-in.
Yeah.
Yep. Concur.
That you can't plug in. That's the way to do it, is that it's just, you go and put petrol in the thing, but you are, you'll see it called series, you'll see it called serial, hybrid, everything works in a row. And Nissan seem to be having a lot of success with their e-Power. I don't know their UK sales figures, but I keep seeing some success. But
Martin, I think also just you could put a 50 kilowatt hour battery pack in there that can be AC or DC charged as much as you want, and then have a range extender. Think i3 as a drivetrain.
Which is brilliant.
That works really well.
God, Honda Clarity was a great example of that too.
Yeah, that was fantastic, wasn't it?
E-Rev is like the most efficient way of doing the plug-in hybrid thing. I think I'd like to mention the Clarity. I think a lot of owners are seeing like 54 miles a gallon, like running under the, with the generator going and just running on the highway.
Dom, I want to get your thoughts on this next story, the Rivian Rewards Program, because this is really interesting. Taking a page out of Tesla's book, we've got time for a couple more stories, I reckon, today. We might have lost Tom. The Rivian Rewards Program provides each Rivian owner with a unique code that they can share with friends. If someone buys a Rivian using your code, both parties get rewards. The R1S or the R1C must be purchased from Rivian's inventory. They call it the R1 shop, I think. Referrals don't count for customer orders. So what are the rewards? According to Rivian's site, for each qualifying purchase, the referrer and the new buyer get 750 points that can be redeemed in the gear shop or the R1 shop. A point is a dollar credit. 6 months of charging at Rivian Adventure Network sites, up to a lifetime limit of 3 years in there as well. It means that in theory, if you already own a Rivian, and you get enough people to buy Rivians using your code, you could, in theory, accumulate enough points to get, a mostly free EV in the R1 shop. It's not quite the same because you can't use it for a deposit, or a custom vehicle configuration, or a reservation, or anything outside the R1 shop. But still, I think it's a pretty interesting referral scheme. You still need to pay the $500 deposit in currency, but look, it's a free Rivian. So if you've got lots of friends that want one, then fill your boots. Rivian said the program will expand over time. They'll look at the point to dollar thing, 750 points at the end of the year. That may change. The first 100 owners who make 25 qualifying referrals get to go to a special Rivian Adventure Weekend sometime in 2025, with more details to be shared later. This is interesting. Carl, you're obviously a Rivian owner, as many people know. This worked incredibly well for Tesla over the years. Many influencers were promised one, if not two, Roadsters when they eventually come. It did work for Tesla. They got rid of theirs. Tesla had just brought their referral back again in Canada and the US. Is this anything that, you've got free supercharging and stuff because people have bought Teslas with your code, but is this a good way to get people excited about buying an EV?
Well, it's a good way to turn your fan base in.
Oops.
Oh, you're still there, Dom.
I think the Cybertruck ran out of charge.
So either the Cybertruck stopped, or Starlink stopped, or his laptop gave up on battery. No, he's plugged in. Right. So,
we have Tom back.
So Tom just came back. Tom, as you just came back, Carl just froze.
Oh, geez.
So,
we're talking about Rivian Rewards and
the. Oh, no, Carl's back.
Carl's back.
Carl, okay. Just as you gave your answer, you stopped. So, say it all again.
Oh, he's on your arm.
Okay. Oh, my power share stopped. I don't know why, and now it's back, but it glitched.
What?
Uh oh.
So, come on, Elon.
Yeah, that was weird because it was. Lights went off.
okay. Right. Starling's back. You're back. Good.
I'll stay on this. I was going to say was the Rivian referral program is a great way to take your fan base and turn them into salespeople. And we all know that the power of brand enthusiasm can do a lot with friends and family. And there are certainly, you know, certainly huge benefits to be had for the referrer, the referee, and the company. And to me, this is what drives brand enthusiasm. You know, you sell a car, get a little something. Honestly, that's it should be. It's like it is literally like a thank you for convincing someone to buy this vehicle. I think it's a great way to keep with the brand enthusiasm. And it's nothing major. Nothing major in the sense that you're not like getting a free car on one referral, but you can over multiple, and then it turns into something exciting. Very, very few people will be able to refer 100 different people, something like that.
Ah, you could, I guess.
We'll see. I don't know. I don't know what we've done a lot with Tesla. We, you know, certainly are. It's not our goal. We're not here plastering our referrals everywhere. We'll put it at the bottom of our videos. But if you know, really, only use my referral or anyone's referral if you don't know another Rivian owner. Like if you've got a buddy, use theirs.
Yeah. Pre-pandemic, like the amount of Tesla content, the whole kind of Tesla doesn't advertise thing, Tesla doesn't market. Well, you know, I know marketing people at Tesla. They do plenty of that. But the whole thing about our fans are our biggest marketers, then that really was a Tesla play that was incredible, especially pre-pandemic. And the amount of content online. There was almost no other EV content for so long. It was just all Tesla content. And, that you know, there is some, I guess, some overkill in that after like 8 years. But for a time, it worked incredibly, you know, incredibly well. Of course, Tom, you have a Rivian as well. You could be giving your code out and get a free one.
Yeah, we'll see. Maybe I will. I didn't really push the Tesla thing when I owned my Teslas. I never really, you know, posted it and said, you know, use my referral code. But maybe I'll do it for this. Who knows? You know, look at all those people driving around free roadsters, you know. So
I know, they got two.
Gives me a goal to reach.
Spare one for the weekends as well. Right, Dom, anything on this before we move on? I'm going to get a couple more stories in, maybe one more.
I mean, just what Kyle says, just to echo what he says, you know, the referral program was incredibly important in building the Tesla brand. You know, it's just, I think they sold a lot of cars that way, and it just makes people enthusiastic about the brand, and you know, they'll talk about it even more. And so if you have Rivian owners for friends, be prepared for lots of conversations coming right up. Yeah, that's about it. Cool. And I guess like Tesla, so we mentioned Tesla's, they restarted their own referral program last Saturday. So Tesla sales have been kind of not growing like they expected, but actually shrinking in the U.S. So they've restarted their referral program. It had stopped for a while. So gives referrers $500 you can spend on pretty much anything, like getting your car serviced, supercharging, merchandise, vehicles, but limited to 10 awards, which is fine. There's 10 is plenty, I think, for anybody really. So it's kind of good to see that program back as well.
In commercial van news, Jim Farley's currently driving around Europe in a e-transit. So if you see him, give him a wave. Say, all right, Jim, what's happening with your EV plan? And also BrightDrop is going to be put under Chevrolet. So there's an instant dealer network there. So whether they're going to be called Chevrolet vans, I wasn't clear on that bit of the announcement, or whether it's going to be the Chevrolet BrightDrop or just BrightDrop inside Chevy dealers. I don't know, but we'll wait and see. But that's super interesting.
It's going to be the Chevrolet BrightDrop 400 and 600 are the names of the vehicles. Now they're not. They were used to be called the Zevo 400 and Zevo 600. Now they're dropping the Zevo thing. Just Chevrolet BrightDrop is like the model name now instead of the brand. And
Oh, glad we got onto that story.
Leave it to TM to make things complicated. Sorry, but right. That's annoying.
This is the third time they've kind of shuffled that around a little bit, but it was just put it in the Involve fold for a little while, like the Pro thing. But now they can, you know, they're going to be on Chevrolet commercial vehicles, you know, lots and part of that whole sales and service dealer network. So that should be helpful for that, for those vehicles at least.
Yeah. Bit of Tesla stuff. The seven-seater weird reports this week, has either begun production in China of the 7-seat Model Y, will begin production, or production starts early 25. Three different reports I read this week, all saying different things, but it seems like they've got at least type approval for changing that vehicle. So we might get that over here in Europe, because we get ours from Shanghai. And I think the UK one's right-hand drive will start to come from Germany soon, I read as well. Maybe Tesla fans can correct me either in the live chat or the comments. Polestar had a big, big week. Their deliveries were up by a significant amount, almost 100%. But, you know, if you have one pint of beer and then you have two pints of beer, that's 100% increase, but you still wouldn't be drunk, would you? So, yes, it was a good number percentage-wise. They changed their CEO, which is, I think, sad. I love Thomas Ingenlath being head of Polestar because he was Volvo's old VP of design, the head of design, and then he went to go do Polestar. But, you know, I do look at my Polestar and think, that's a nice Volvo. So perhaps that is the curse at Polestar. They should just forever have been the performance fast bit of Volvo and never been spun off. But a new CEO there, a chap who was...
So, Martin, did you see where the new CEO comes from?
why don't you tell us?
It might be best LinkedIn resume. Because it was at Opel, which isn't bad. Opel's fine, but not a premium brand. Then VinFast.
Oh!
Which we all know has a rising, you know, quality and sales department and just an amazing brand overall as an owner. And then Nikola.
How
did he end up here? I mean, I don't know the guy. Maybe he's amazing. Running companies in the ground. I don't know what his deal is.
He's more of an operator. So as in, you know, Opel under Stellantis, apparently he did some good things that I've done. Again, I'm not super into corporate car world, that I know all of the execs, but yeah.
He was given a lot of credit for turning Opel around when Stellantis picked up the brand. It wasn't doing any good, and he immediately put a plan into action. It paid off. Over the next 2 years, they saw the highest sales they'd ever seen in actual profits at Opel. And so he was there for, like, I think 7 years before he went to VinFast. He wasn't there for very long, like 6 months. Then Nikola. Then he was with Nikola for a couple of years, because I kind of expected Nikola to sort of die, and then it didn't. I didn't really pay attention to, like, a lot of the details. I didn't realize he was running it. But he only left there because there was the reason was a family health situation that, you know, he... So now it's been a year or so since he left that. We never know whether that's an actual thing. People give all kinds of reasons for leaving companies, especially at higher levels. But if you want to just take it as, like, a face value, that's the reason given. And so it should be interesting to see what happens here at Polestar now. I wouldn't hold his resume against him, is what I'm saying.
Okay, I agree. Basically. That's fair. So it could be great. He could be an awesome guy. I've never met him, he might be the best guy on the planet, but it is just really funny looking at the resume. You can't ignore that. That is hilarious. Right. Mark says, and my friend Matt told me the other day, the only thing that would have been better is he worked for Fisker.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, maybe that might have been a great thing, actually. Maybe he really could have, you know, kept Fisker alive, you know, if he had been in there on the ground floor.
But is a beacon of your career to keep these dying companies alive? Is that what you want to be known for? Or is it to, like, drive something into massive success?
Well, I mean, like I say, I really want Polestar to work because I really like them. You know, there's two of us on the podcast that own one. They are effectively just a Volvo. And when Volvo acquired Polestar fully, should they just have forever have been the interesting, fasty, maybe, you know, bit of Volvo? The whole floating them... I'm asking a question, I'm answering it as well. Yes, they should never have been spun off, so they should never have been floated. You know, Geely will obviously back them because they're releasing the 3 and the 4. They're not going to fold. Mm-hmm. They're not going to be a Fisker. So, you know, Geely have got deep pockets. They'll carry on funding them for now. Volvo have backed away. They've got their own bills to pay. But, it does seem like it's...
After I made that post, I open up the garage at the hub, and my Polestar is a complete brick.
No.
Right, so I'm not sure if this dude logged into my car and just hit, you know, destroy itself.
Delete.
But it still doesn't work. I jumped the 12 volt. I charged the high voltage battery. It still has every warning light on the book on it. It will not drive the electric motors in any way. It's running totally on combustion, but it's under warranty. So what do I care? But also it's like, okay, at least there was no battery degradation. That's what I cared about. Like, I mean, the battery's fine, but there's an electrical.
Both of our cars, the Polestar 1, Polestar 2, were both destined to be Volvos. Like, they were designed by Thomas Ingenlath. They were Volvos, but and they moved them over to Polestar. So the three and the four, again, different platforms, but they are, at least they are Polestars. I'd like to, if possible, get to one more thing. Dom, sorry, final word.
Oh, I was just going to say the Polestar is an important brand. I mean, it was just a way for Volvo to really kind of get into the direct to customer sales situation and have like dedicated stores so they would avoid dealer networks, because there was a lot of noise. You know, there's been a lot of noise about, you know, EVs at dealers and people not getting the good experiences and people tacking on prices. You never know. So, you know, people were very vocal about how much they love the Tesla buying experience. You know, you kind of get what you pay for. There's not a haggling is over quickly. So I think they wanted to replicate that kind of success. So that was the gamble. We're not sure that it really paid off because the rollout was so slow with just that one model for forever. So,
yeah.
But your Polestar buying experience is a dealer.
Yeah, that's true.
But is it now though?
Yeah, I when I bought my Polestar, it came actually on all the paperwork. It was McDonald Volvo Polestar. Yeah. It wasn't Polestar.
Yeah.
Right.
When I go to service, I bring it to a Volvo dealer.
Right. But the original vision, I believe, was like direct sales and their own like stores, not dealerships.
It didn't work. And when Max got his Polestar through a dealer. You have like a very online and in person is like a direct to consumer environment, but it's through a dealer.
Disappointed about your Polestar 1 though. I'd love that vehicle so much.
It's under warranty, so no big deal. But I'm hoping now that I let it sit overnight on a battery tender with the high voltage battery charged to 50%, things will reset itself.
Before we go, let's talk about Smart. Now, if you think that the new Smart car is out and it is a dinky little 2 or 2 plus 2, you couldn't be further from the truth. Smart is entirely changing its brand. The Smart, I've got to call it Smart hashtag 5 because that's the name of the vehicle, but can we just call it the Smart 5? Yeah. The Smart hashtag 5 has premiered in Australia. It's Mercedes, it's Geely coming together. It's a midsize. It's the Geely SEA platform. So 800 volts, 100 kilowatt hour battery. It's a big boy battery. This is not what you think of a smart car. They are reinventing the brand. A bit of soft roading ambition in there with a light bar and roof rack and underbody protection. And a little ladder if you want. You can get some accessories for this to get onto the roof. It's basically the size of a Model Y. Maybe a little bit shorter. EQB. I think from certain angles, they're channeling their inner Kia soul, or at least they've redesigned the soul for 2025. Premium features include the zero gravity seats, a 2000 watt stereo by Sennheiser, and it's going to be a global vehicle. I think this is great, and I think it's going to take people by surprise when they see that this is a smart car. Again, big brands behind it. Smart might not be the best known, or if they are known, it's going to be because you saw them next to the Mercedes dealer. Certainly our Smart dealership is next to the Mercedes. It's on their lot. And you're used to seeing these little 2 and 4 seater things flying around, certainly here. And this is going to be, I think, a shock, but hopefully in a nice way. Very premium vehicle, this. I'm glad we got to get to this before we left. Tom, I don't know if you got to head off. You're at the in-laws. What do you think of this?
I think it looks cool. I actually haven't read a lot of the details on it yet, but I think that looks cool. And it's kind of like the size of every, it seems like every vehicle I see around here now anyway. Yeah. It's kind of right. I mean, I think that would be we talked about the Equinox, an Equinox competitor, you know, Equinox, Ioniq 5, Model Y, ID4, Mustang Mach-E. It's right in that ballpark. Size-wise, and with a good size battery and decent charging, I think it'll slot right in nicely.
Augmented reality head-up display, 348 miles WLTP from the 100 kilowatt hour battery, 10 to 80% in under 20 minutes, really fast charging. Nice platform on this, and I had just looking for a price. I can't see an indicated price on this while I have a look. Kyle, what do you think?
Well, I didn't say... I didn't say anything bad. Oh, did I lose you guys? Or are you back?
No, you're back. Yeah, we got you.
I didn't say anything bad about this one online, but then I went to go start my smart car at the same time I went to go start Polestar. And electrical system malfunction, will not charge. I don't know what, why all the cars just went to crap. And then I started our e-tron. It had a lighting malfunction. And what else was broken? I don't know. A bunch of stuff just like in the 2 or 3 weeks I was gone, whatever, just like went to shit. I don't know what happened. But aside from that, which I don't even know where I would get my smart car serviced, thinking about it.
Right?
There's no smart dealers anymore. That's going to be an issue. Yeah, but I don't think our local center, I tried that. They won't work on it. So I have to go tow it to another Mercedes dealer. And, you know, they're going to charge an arm and a leg just to look at it. But this thing, hate the interior, love the exterior.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like the styling. Like I said, I think it's a bit like a Soul on steroids, or just kind of brought up to, you know, up to date. Still can't find a price in it. I think it looks really cool. I like it a lot. I think it looks a bit smaller than it probably is. It probably is. Put it next to Mercedes EQB, exactly the same with that high roof line all the way to the back. Dom.
I think it's interesting that they premiered it in Australia, because we won't be getting it here, and we won't be getting it in Canada as well, because Canada just imposed 100% tariffs on Chinese vehicles as well. That's also, I think it's down our story list a little bit.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's great, but you know, it's going to be in your neck of the woods, Martin. Available for you and our European viewers, but
yeah,
here not so much.
So yeah, a lot going on with tariffs. I'll just put a picture of the back of the car while we talk. Yeah, a lot happening with tariffs. Before we sign off today, Canada putting 100% tariffs on. Tesla managing again to negotiate, I think, an exemption. Tesla in Europe managed to negotiate not an exemption, but 9%. So there was already a 10% fee on Chinese-made vehicles. And so Tesla only 9, but look, some of them like 35%. So and again, from a report this week from one of the political blogs, talked about how some of the Chinese car makers don't engage because they haven't got to. You know, they're effectively state organizations. Of course they're not. But they effectively are not used to operating with the European Union demanding a bunch of information about why their cars are so cheap, and some of them just didn't engage, and they ended up with 35% plus 10% tariffs. Looked like Tesla did engage and had that conversation and managed to negotiate it down. But yeah, look, all these cars that are built in China, we're back to the Polestar problem, aren't we? Like, we're going to build our Polestars in China. We're like, I don't think you are, my friends. Find some Volvo factories in America. So the whole kind of tariffs thing, again, is just blowing. You know, the US, EU, Canada, Trump saying, you know, 100% tariff on Mexican made goods, so that won't be a backdoor if he wins. And so it's all affecting EVs as well. But maybe that's a topic for a different podcast. We should call it a day there and put this one in the books, because we are a little bit over. Thank you, as always, for joining us and watching. If anybody is an expert in streaming, help us understand why we've got 1,300 people watching the live stream right now, and yet some weeks it'll be 600. I don't know the answer. Like, we're on YouTube and Twitch and X, and it just bounces around, and I can't think that it's a, you know, double the audience this week. But anyway, so for the 1,300 people watching, thank you. Hopefully you're enjoying it. Keep the conversation going in the comments below during the week, because we're all off doing our own things and you're off doing your own things, but let's keep the conversation going. We'd love to see what you think in the comments section, even though the live chat will be closed. And of course, if you're not, because we can see not everyone's subscribed, please hit subscribe to the channel, because it really helps us out, and give us a thumbs up. Again, that really helps out. Thank you very, very much, as always, for joining us, and we'll see you again very soon. Hey Dom, say ciao.
Ciao.